So there's a wisdom gap in our culture. Let me explain what I mean by that. I heard a radio report while driving this past week, and it was about the car industry and the difficulty in making profits and a living in selling new cars these days. It seems that car dealers and the salespeople are finding themselves more and more, as they get to the end of the month, selling cars at less than dealer invoice, so less than the dealer pays for them. The reason they do that is because at least if they sell that car, they can count it towards a manufacturer's quota. And if they reach that quota, then they can get bonuses from the manufacturer. So the idea is that you lose your money in the sale, but that you hopefully make that back up in the bonuses. There's a number of reasons why there's been a change in the thinning profit margins in the consumer car industry over the past number of years, but one of the biggest factors that researchers have discovered is simply the amount of information that consumers have access to nowadays. You know, in the past, consumers were often underinformed about the car specs, about what the dealer paid for those cars, what comparable car sales were in the region. And as they were underinformed, it was easier to extract profits from them. But now we have little computers, little libraries in our pockets, right? And within just a few minutes, you can access all the information that you need to negotiate a rock bottom deal for a new car. With all that information on the table, it's just simply really difficult to make a profit on selling a car. So, it's true that there's a lot of information, and that's changing the car industry. And we tend to be a more well-informed people, but it's also true that we don't always have the wisdom, right? We don't always have the practical skill and using the information that we have in ethical, healthy, healing ways. We don't always use that information in the wisest ways possible. So every day, well-informed consumers walk into car dealerships and they buy cars that they cannot afford, that they like rather than they need, and they still make well-informed but unwise car buying decisions, right? This isn't judgmental on anyone in the room, it's just sort of trying to make a point here. So my interest this morning is really not in the car industry, but the car industry makes visible a wider reality in our culture, right? That we are well-informed people, but there's a gap in our ability to use that information wisely. Now, I know I'm a preacher, but I don't want to get overly preachy this morning, but I will observe this, which you are no doubt already aware, that in our culture, we have well-informed people that consistently make unwise decisions, not just about buying cars, but about a whole bunch of other things as well. And our country, I think it's true, we are well-informed, but we still make very unwise decisions as a country about economics and about environmental stewardship. I think it's true that we make unwise decisions when we ravenously consume entertainment news. We do that, don't we? We make unwise decisions while we're being well-informed by staring at our screens 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. My phone wakes me up in the middle of the night, like I sleep with it by my head. I gotta stop that, right? I don't think I'm alone. I think we are a well-informed people that make unwise decisions, and we've developed unwise habits of tolerating terrible things, like racism, like sexual misconduct that we've seen all over the news headlines the past few weeks. We make unwise decisions by tolerating the horrors of gun violence. Did you hear that just a week ago that there was another mass shooting at a Texas small Baptist church? Once again, once again, once again. We are well informed, but often we are unwise. Let's pray. God, we know time is against us this morning. There's so much going on in the life of the community, so much that needs to be said that we're running a bit long in the service. And that's okay, because your word is broken open before us. Help us to settle in. Help us to focus. Help us to spare a few minutes for matters of substance about our lives and the real world that we live in. God, give it all to us right between the eyes and change us. Amen. So this wisdom gap that we have in our culture, it's not new. It's been going on for a really, really long time. And a very long time ago, as Lindsay mentioned to us, there was an anonymous author that wrote a book called The Wisdom of Solomon, or simply The Book of Wisdom. And as she said, it's part of a set of books known as the Apocrypha or the Deuterocanonicals. And those seven books were part of a book called, Bible translation, called the Septuagint. Right? I don't want to get too much in the weeds here, but basically that was the first Greek language translation of the Hebrew Old Testament that was used widely in Jesus' own time by the Jewish community, and was the Bible that Jesus was likely familiar with. So Jesus would likely have known about the Book of Wisdom. It in the Reformation, so we talked about that here a few weeks ago, in the 16th century, the Reformers, for a variety of reasons we don't have time to go into, didn't really like these seven books that we call the Apocrypha. So they pulled those out, and our canon has 66 books of the Bible, Old and New Testament, whereas the Roman Catholic and the Orthodox Christian churches, they maintain 73. So there's a different emphasis on these particular seven books. Sort of an interesting note about the Bible. Well, the Book of Wisdom itself was written 100 years, maybe 200 years before Jesus was born, and it was written in Alexandria, which was a seaport on the Mediterranean in Egypt, about 200 miles north and west of Cairo. And the author is anonymous, but it's clear from the text itself that the author was living in Alexandria, but a passionate Jew that was very excited about God and God's movements in the world. And so the author writes this book, but he writes it, or she writes it, in a social context that has some great similarities to the social context we live in now. Alexandria was well informed, right? It was a crossroads of trade, the Library of Alexandria, right? It was an educational center, well-educated people, lots of information, lots of ideas coming through there, often competing with the Jewish tradition. All different kinds of ideas, religious, political, social ideas, right? Competing for the Jewish understanding of God and the world that we live in. So the author writes in the middle of this metropolis and is very interested in defending Judaism over and against these competing and very interesting ideas. Not unlike our world today, right? We are well informed. We have access to all different kinds of competing ideas. Many of those ideas are really, really convincing, right? And so there is a need for us from time to time to re-explore, reclaim our tradition anew. So the Book of Wisdom was written to do that for the Jewish community in Alexandria. Interesting history, but that sets us up to look at our particular passage this morning from chapter 6, verses 12 through 17, which you do not have in your pews, I don't believe. But we did read it, and I'll kind of go through it again. Okay, so we have in chapter 6, verse 12, we have a claim by the author that wisdom is a female. Not a claim, really. It's a personification of wisdom as a female. Most scholars think that was pulled right out of Proverbs 8. That you can look at. And there's a personification of Lady Wisdom, right, in romantic language. So that's borrowed by the author and explored a little bit more further here. And wisdom is named Lampra Kai Amarantos in the Greek, that wisdom is radiant and unfading. In verse 12, the remainder of verse 12, the author goes on to say that wisdom is easily discerned, easily found by those who look for her and those who love her. Right, so wisdom is easily found. In verses 13 and 14, very interesting that wisdom makes herself known. She waits for us, but the author goes on to make the point that wisdom is not only passive, right? That as we seek wisdom, wisdom is also seeking us. Wisdom wants to be found and wants us to find her. As we go into verse 15, we find that wisdom is wants to be found, is seeking us as we seek her, and that when we find her, we get perfect understanding and we are freed from care. Oh, that's incredibly profound and so important. How many of us in this room are free from care about anything? So what a wonderful piece of good news to know that when we seek wisdom that's easy to find, we can gain understanding and find freedom from care. In verse 16, and actually up through 20, verse 20, which we did not read, there's this great little thing called the chain syllogism. I have never been able to say that in church before or anywhere else in my life, as a matter of fact. There is a chain syllogism, which just means this. One idea leads to the next, leads to the next, leads to the next, right? A leads to B, leads to C, leads to D, and so on. So in this passage, what we have is that we find wisdom, we seek wisdom, she seeks us, we gain understanding and a freedom from care, and then we go on, that when we do that, that we get a desire for instruction, a desire for wisdom, and then we fall in love with the wisdom, with the ways and the laws of God that bring justice and that bring life to us and through us. And that as we fall in love with that, we gain immortality, which is a bold claim. And in the immortality, we gain a closeness to God. And in the closeness to God, we gain the kingdom, which is over and against the kingdom that we know. Right? One of the points that the Book of Wisdom makes is that the world is not as we think it is, that God really is in control even when it doesn't seem like it, right? We think the kings and the nations and coercive power is in control, but really it's God that's in control, and that wisdom is the primary way that we access God's kingdom and nothing else or nothing less. So, it's all very fast that we've gone through. This is a whole lot of information contained within here, but putting all of that history that we just ran through and all of the poetry, the abstractions and its mysticism, bringing that all back to a point for us to take home together, and I offer this, that there is in this text a great invitation for each of us and all of us. It's an invitation to be those who seek wisdom. There's an invitation here not to just look for information, but to look for formation, right? To be formed more and more in the ways of God. The invitation for us is to seek wisdom, to seek the practical things that we can do with our lives, with our skills and our craft, how we put the information and the resources that we have available to us, to put those together in such a way that the world is made better and that life comes to us and through us. The invitation for us in this book is easy to say and hard to live out, but it is to be a wisdom seeker. So I know that we have all the information in the world in our pockets. And I know too that we have a wisdom gap. And that wisdom gap is bad news for us. It's bad news that leads the world to be the way that it is, with all the hurts and the harms, with the gun violence and the racism and the sexual misconduct, and for us making poor decisions all in all areas of our lives. Right? That's a true fact about our experience, I think, certainly mine. But along with the bad news that we have is we have good news. that there's an antidote to all of that in wisdom. The good news is that wisdom isn't so hard to find, that as we seek it, it seeks us and finds us. The good news is that we are invited to be wisdom seekers, and in that way, to transform our lives and the world. It's a powerful tool that's hanging out there for us to grab and to use. So as you leave here today, friends, man, be wisdom seekers and see what comes.